All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. We're excited because it's October 4th, 2018, and we are back for another edition of the OmniTalk Fast Five. Before we get to it, I do have an exciting announcement to make. We have a new sponsor for this week's podcast, and that is Storefront. Today's OmniTalk podcast is brought to you by Storefront, and Storefront is the world's largest marketplace for short-term retail space, helping brands put on pop-up shows around the world. Go to thestorefront.com to download their guide to the perfect pop-up experience and to find out more about Storefront. Thank you to them for their continued support of OmniTalk, and if you haven't heard our Spotlight Series podcast with the Storefront CEO, Mohammed Awash, we just released it on Tuesday, and we highly encourage everyone to check it out. All right, we're also excited because we're in studio today, and you'll notice, especially if you're watching on YouTube, we have a new guest. Carter is not here today. Carter actually is not feeling well. He's a little under the weather, so get well, Carter. But we're excited because Dan Fawn is here today as a guest host for the Fast Five. So
welcome.
Hello,
welcome,
retail Dan. Friends.
Dan, we all go way back with Dan. We've all known Dan for quite a long time. Dan runs his company called Late Majority, mm-hmm. and he also puts on a conference twice a year called Q4. So Dan, before we get started, I'd love for you to share a little bit about who you are and talk a little bit about the Q4 conference.
Yeah, so the Late Majority, we focus on learning and development, culture change, any company go through some sort of transformation, which it seems like it's all companies Everyone. Right now. And so it's from that culture piece. They've been working on the strategy for a while. It's not just the skills that need to change, but it's also the behavior of the organization. So we do that, focus on a lot of retailers around the world. And yeah, you talked about Q4, the unconference, which we call it.
The because, unconference.
Personally, I don't like going to conferences that much. And so when I started it last year, I made a list of the things that I hate about conferences.
Okay.
What was on that list?
Big sponsorships. I would say a lot of the headline speakers that aren't even from that industry, they come on stage, they jack up their ticket price because you hear them talk for 10 minutes and you don't really take anything away. And then for me, I have a learning and development background. Mm-hmm. A lot of people go to conferences because they want to learn something and take it back to their companies and apply it the next day. And so that's where I approached this unconference. And what I really like about it is the topics are determined by the participants. And so a few months before I even plan it and even choose the speakers, I say, what do you want to know about right now? And I survey the participants from last year or the ones who I think are coming. And then from that, I curate the different topics. And I'm really excited. It's in 3 weeks on October 25th here in Minneapolis. It's a one-day event, and there are still tickets left.
Not very many, though, right?
No.
Like, it's going
we have like
quick.
20 to 30 left. I'll have to check again.
Yeah, that's exciting. That's what I love about it. I've participated a few times. I know Anne has as well, and I like the part of it's about doing. Mm-hmm. So let's all get together, let's talk, and here are things you can actually do and take back to your business that day,
right.
Which I think is really differentiating. Mm-hmm. And we also, all of us, Carter, Ann, and I will actually be live podcasting this, the Fast Five, at the conclusion of that event this mm-hmm. year in October. So we're pumped.
Yeah.
Can't wait for it. It'll be fun.
Awesome.
Well, let's give ourselves a little practice then, heading that direction.
Right.
Dan, are you ready
mm-hmm.
for this?
I'm ready.
All right. We're going to do it roundtable style again. It seems like we're getting great feedback on that, especially being here in studio. So I'll kick it off. So I think headline number one this week has to be about Amazon. No surprise, right? So really there were two things from Amazon in the past week. One was they opened their 4-star store in New York. And then number two, they opened their new, it's not necessarily their store, but they opened a store in partnership with Good Housekeeping called GH Lab in the Mall of America. Now, Ann and I got a chance to tour that store, what was it, on Tuesday night before it opened?
Yep.
And I'm curious, what was your take on that store?
Well, I think for me, the most interesting thing about it is that the two stores could not be more separate in their layout. So if you look at the Amazon 4-star store, we haven't physically been in the store, but we've seen a plethora of photographs and video from it.
Yeah.
And it is just a hodgepodge of crap on tables.
Looks like a flea market almost.
I was a little disappointed when I first saw the photos. Yeah. Like, what are they thinking? And what, you know, Chris and I have talked a lot about, like, what are they trying to learn here? Because right now it just looks kind of like a hot mm-hmm. mess of stuff. And You know, everything from a Triceratops taco holder to to a 4-star rated massager that's on the same table.
It reminded me of the old Sharper Image stores.
Yes.
It did. Yeah,
totally.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Totally.
That's a good way.
But the GH Lab store at the Mall of America, I have to say, I think both of us were really blown away by how well it was put together. It kind of gave us chills being in that store, just realizing the full potential of what this store really could be and will be for retailers, seeing the people interacting there and kind of the buzz as they were leaving the store that, you know, this is not far off from becoming industry standard in these types of malls. And I think the last thing I'll say is that, you know, a big point of contention for people was that they're going to have to download the app and that there's no cash in the store.
Right.
And I think they did an excellent job. I mean, it's so simple. You use your Amazon app. All of your data is in there. How many people are really going to have to download the Amazon app?
Yeah, who doesn't have the Amazon
right.
app?
And so I think that, you know, they've just done a really great job of seamlessly merging these experiences.
Yeah. And we actually put an article out on Forbes Wednesday morning trying to get a jump on everyone around this. So you guys should check it out and read it. There's actually a video of Ann and I shopping the store, too, which I got a little overly enthusiastic on, too, which I'm sure the fans of OmniTalk will love. But, Dan, what's your take? I'm curious, especially
question,
on the 4-star side, too.
You, with a good housekeeping one, how is that different? You talked about their special QR code.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't other retailers do something like this? Is this what it is?
Yeah, I think any retailer could do this, honestly. Okay. I think the biggest drawback is what Ann said, which is you have to convince people to download their app.
Right.
And Amazon doesn't have that problem because it's already such an important part of their business. I think I read something that 50% of Amazon's mobile growth is coming from apps.
Okay.
Right? So they have that advantage, but literally anyone could do it. I think what's interesting is from a QR code perspective, like, you don't even need those. Like you could get to the point where visual search starts to take the place of that.
Right.
So operationally, it actually becomes even easier than what you're seeing in that installation. But just so everyone knows, like basically you walk into the store, products is adorned everywhere. There's nice vignettes of everything. It's beautifully merchandised. And if you see something you like, you take your Amazon app out, you scan a barcode, and then you get ported right into the Amazon e-commerce experience, and you can decide how you want that product fulfilled. So it's really the first great example we've seen, I'd say, here in the States of buying being completely separate from shopping, right? You can shop the store however you want, and the buying or the fulfillment can kind of happen as an afterthought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all the product, just to clarify, too, for the listeners, it's chosen specifically by Good Housekeeping, which we kind of also talked about, like, who's really benefiting from this? Like, from our point of view, like, this is great for Good Housekeeping. Mm-hmm. Like, how many people are exposed to their, like, top products on a regular basis? And so, you know, it's kind of the 4-star, Amazon 4-star stores, they're, you know, 4-star or higher rated products. And then this is a similar format where it's, you know, kind of curating from lists of, you know, 15,000 vacuums or car seats or kitchen appliances and really curating those in a store format that's really designed to help that discovery process that Amazon's been working on.
With the 4-star, how hard is it to get to 4 stars for a normal, decent product in the first place?
I mean, that's maybe why there's so many things on the table.
Right.
I don't know.
The one comment I would have there, and I do want to come back to a little bit of what you're touching on with Good Housekeeping too, Ann, is the thing I find interesting about that is 4 stars is really something you need when you're shopping online, right? Because you can't touch and feel the product. So it's kind of your validation that this is a good product. So the question I would have is, are those actually the products you want in a physical space? Or do you want products where those aren't enough, right? And there's other things that you want to be able to touch and feel or help you need to get. Like, so that, I think it's cool. It's novel. It's different. Again, to your point, any retailer could be doing this. I don't know why no one has. Actually seems really easy. Like, you're just putting your reviews somewhere in the store on all the products you sell. So it's novel, it's interesting, but I got to wonder over time if it's going to kind of change in direction a little bit, because I don't think those are necessarily the products you need to go to a store for, because you can be that confident in purchasing them online and just seeing what they had in that store too. I don't need to see those things in a store, but it is novel.
Mm-hmm.
Back to Good Housekeeping thing though, I think what's the point, and you're probably going to touch on this later too, Ann, is Good Housekeeping is a content producer, you know, which is fascinating to me. And there's been a debate going on LinkedIn. Dan's been in it as well around, you know, why would retailers set up shop this way by porting people into an Amazon experience? And I think the idea of content is really interesting here, because what you have with Good Housekeeping is they have an authority on certain products.
Mm-hmm.
And as you start to, you know, advance into the future with influencers and social media, they have a certain authority on products too. And so if you now have an operating system that those people can plug into and they can get sponsorships or be paid to set up storefronts and pick products that they believe in, why wouldn't they do this? You could see how that would come down the road.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. All right, let's do story number two.
So story number two is that Walmart has purchased they've acquired Eloquii this week. And for those of you unfamiliar, Eloquii is a growing digitally native plus size clothing company. They were purchased for an estimated $100 million.
My favorite was the reports were more than ModCloth, but less than Bodega.
Right.
And now they're saying 100.
So being the woman on the show, I'm going to give you guys just kind of my interpretation and background
of this
company. Because what they, you know, I had a chance to hear their CEO, Mariah Chase, speak at IRCE this year.
Yep.
And I have to say that it was one of the most moving, you know, when you're talking about, you know, big brands coming up on stage, it was one of the most moving presentations that I've seen. And, you know, their main kind of ethos of their company is that they believe in the transformative power of fashion and what that's able to do to, you know, self-esteem and mindset and really, you know, engaging with their customers and making sure that they create these experiences for their customer base, which is growing exponentially in the United States, which I think is why Walmart is taking interest in them. But what I think is going to be the most interesting thing to watch with this Walmart acquisition is Eloquii has this incredible feedback loop with their customer base. Hmm. They were started, a while back, I think, by The Limited.
Yep.
They went offline in 2014 and then have come back. And their emphasis since they've been back is really around, you know, having that almost like a Glossier connection with their customers, listening to feedback from their customers and then recreating product or changing product set. Their customers begged them to open physical stores, and they did that as a result. And so I think what I will be watching is how that relationship continues to evolve now that Walmart's in the mix. Walmart does have their own plus size product set, but, you know, Eloquii is really, they stand on their ability to create this unique fashion forward brand in the plus size market. And I hope that they're able to maintain that customer feedback loop with Walmart in the mix.
Do we know yet if the plan is to sell in Walmart stores?
They haven't said, there hasn't been too much that they've outlined yet as to what their plan is. But I would assume that they would test that in some markets. They do get scale with being a part of Walmart, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, you know, the story is barely 24 hours old. I think, you know, it's that whole, we're going to extend the brand and the offering of Walmart. And I think to the point, we heard the CEO speak at IRCE. I think this could work, you know, from my perspective. The thing I have to say on this is just, it's another one of these acquisition moves by Walmart, right? And the strategy is just, we want to broaden our brand. Well, okay, well, everything fits that definition. So like, that's where I struggle deciding which of these acquisitions are good or not. The other thing I worry about with this is it's $100 million. Okay, so then I look at, you've got Brandless, which we talked about last month. They just got $200 million in their latest round of funding. Everything is supercharged and overfunded right now.
Yeah.
So in a way, Walmart's buying things on the cheap, and you also have to wonder, well, why aren't these things more expensive? So if these are good businesses, why aren't they more valued? So what are we I just don't know that it's really clear yet what the plans are here and what they're going to do with these and how valuable these assets really are. And they can keep doing it, but is anything going to come of it? I don't know. And it's still, I don't see where it's really strategically differentiating for them against the likes of, you know, say these types of offerings on Amazon with plus sizes and that type of thing, or other companies over the long run. So,
and Walmart hasn't ruined Bonobos yet, right?
They haven't ruined it, as far as I know.
Sure.
No. Do you shop there, Dan?
At Walmart or Bonobos?
Bonobos.
No.
Either one.
Neither. No.
No. Okay. Awesome. All right, Dan, what's story number three?
Story number three. So JCPenney finally has a new CEO after a long vacancy. It is Jill Soltau. She comes from Joann Fabric. And prior to that, she's worked at Kohl's, Shopko, I believe. And then we have Sears as well. So she comes from a merchandising background. I love this because...
A who's who of modern day retailers.
Right. I love this because we have another woman in a leadership role at a big company. She seems to know the JCPenney customer better than the last one. So the last one came from a hardware store. And, you know, we saw that he wanted to bring in appliances to JCPenney. And that seems really offline with who their customer is.
I agree. I'm happy to see a woman. She's already a CEO, mm-hmm. so she's moving into another CEO position, which is fantastic. However, I got to say, JCPenney, mm-hmm. bring somebody in to diversify your C-suite. I mean, what are they going to learn from another person who is coming in who knows that exact customer base? Like, is there going to be any differing of opinion? You know, you talk about JCPenney's, one of their big challenges was like the couponing that they were doing and figuring out deals because they know their current core customer wants the deal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're going to bring in somebody who is part of an organization that still distributes a weekly 40% off printed mm-hmm. coupon mm-hmm. in a digital circular. I feel like JCPenney could be in a tough spot because I don't know her, but I feel like if I were in JCPenney's kind of decision-making process for the next CEO, I would want somebody that's going to bring a different point of view in, and I don't know that this is the right hire.
Yeah, it's digital on paper. I mean, we've talked about this before, but to be successful in this modern age, you have to have learning agility, and learning agility, mm-hmm. by definition, is the ability to succeed in first-order conditions, things you haven't experienced before. You know, nowhere is that more important than now. And so I've never met the woman. I don't know her at all. Her reputation seems good. I've mm-hmm. seen a number of things going out in the news media that, you know, thinks this is a really solid hire. But I think to Anne's point, you do have to just stop and look at the resume and say, okay, this is not a list of modern retailers. You know, how set up for success can she be in these first order conditions of trying to bring JCPenney's to a place that it hasn't been, you know, or has never been, really, which is, you know, more in the position of a modern day retailer. I don't know. It's tough. Just looking on paper, it's hard for me to see how this works. But like we say, and why we do How Millennial Are You, you know, curiosity is a state of mind. It's not something representative of age and experience either. And so hopefully she has it and she can figure out where to go next.
I mean, most of the headlines talk about we're bringing in Jill to turn around JCPenney's or turn around. And I think they need to reframe it as evolving or transforming, you know, all those buzzwords, because you cannot turn around this JCPenney ship.
Right. What's she going to do with mm-hmm. JCPenney's in its current state? I mean, anyone, not just Jill. Like, it's anybody with given the landscape.
Yeah, it's a hard task for anyone, right?
Yeah. Even Lionel Richie couldn't turn JCPenney around.
Yeah, what happened to the Lionel Richie stuff? I thought that was going to turn everything around. But that's a good point, though. This is not about turnaround. This mm-hmm. is this business model doesn't work, and it needs to be transformed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right, and number four.
Okay, so Justice for Girls, another company you guys are probably very familiar
Justice
with.
For Girls. I know this company, yes.
All right.
It came from Limited 2, correct?
Yes.
All right.
Look at this. So Justice for Girls is, for those of you, again, unfamiliar with this store, it's basically an explosion of girl apparel, accessories, everything for the young, I would say, 5 to 14-year-old demographic. They are creating their own entertainment division. And I think this is something to take note of. As Chris noted earlier before in the show, we are seeing these brands become content providers and content providers becoming brands. I think this is this new trend that we're kind of seeing in the evolution of retail. Mm-hmm. And so Justice is creating Justice Studios, which will be graphic novels. Mm-hmm. It will be a video series, music, documentaries. They're going to like go all out. They're partnering with Elevate Studios to do this. And they're even creating live Justice Awards. So like if you're familiar with the Nickelodeon Awards, mm-hmm. now there's going to be Justice Awards. So who knows? It'll probably be glitter instead of slime. But but I mean, it's just... You know, there. You look at this as the first brand with this demographic as their main target, and this is their kind of foray into what they're going to explore for the future of retail. And so I think it's something to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's along the lines of what you've talked about with Pop Sugar before, mm-hmm. what we just talked about with Good Housekeeping. Dan, you seem very familiar with this brand. Anything to add?
I mean, I think it's a good decision. When I think about all the content from everything from graphic novels to studios to awards, I'm not thinking about the product that they're selling. I'm thinking about who their customer is. It's their parents and the tween, and what is their desired outcome. Mm-hmm. And so it's not just trying to get more clothes to wear, but I want clothes from Justice because it helps me feel confident, or it gives me individuality. And hopefully they can translate that message to the content that they're putting out there.
Yep.
And it creates lock-on in a different way. So when these tweens grow up, I don't know if there's other brands that they can migrate to that they own, or, you know, when they become parents too, they'll remember, oh, I grew up with this show from Justice, and
right.
I bought the clothes that went along with it. I can't wait mm-hmm. for my daughter or my son
right.
in the future to do that as well.
Yeah.
I think how you bring content, I love that you keep hitting on this every week too, because how you bring content to commerce mm-hmm. and what tools you use to make that happen, I think is becoming a really interesting question. Like,
yeah.
I, even as you guys were talking, I'm thinking back, this is going to make me sound really old,
mm-hmm.
but I'm thinking back to like Transformers. Like, there's this great thing on yep. Netflix right now where they show the invention of toys, all the different toys that
oh,
have come
yeah.
out. You guys
mm-hmm.
seen that?
Yep.
It's really worth the watch. But, you know, like, it was some guy saw something in a toy fair, and then they're all of a sudden they're like, well, let's make a comic book around it. Let's make a video yep. series around it. Well, why can't it be now with technology that like we just talked about with Good Housekeeping? Why can't it be, let's make a pop-up mm-hmm. store around it, mm-hmm. right? We don't have to invest a lot of inventory.
Story.
We don't need retailers the way we did mm-hmm. before, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
exactly what Lego did a decade ago to
yeah.
turn themselves around, too.
Right.
Instead
yeah.
of being just a toy company, we're all about play right now. And that is movies. That is comic books.
Absolutely.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so the CPGs that can figure that out, or the brands that can figure that out and understand how they are a content mm-hmm. platform or experience, I mean, that could be potentially really disruptive. So great. It's a great highlight this week. Who knew we'd ever be talking about Justice on OmniTalk? So that's awesome.
I hope it won't be the last.
Hopefully
time.
It won't be the last. Sounds like it won't be, especially if Dan comes back to guest host.
Right.
All right. So last story of the week. So this one actually has to do with Walgreens. Walgreens was actually in the news a couple times this week. So one, they're forming a partnership with Kroger. Got my K's confused there. And then also they're forming a partnership with Birchbox. So to give you guys some background, 13 Walgreens stores in Northern Kentucky, which is very close to the Kroger headquarters, will actually now allow online ordering and pickup at nearby Walgreens locations. And then also we'll have a partnership with Birchbox where people can go in and shop. I don't remember how many stores it is, but they can go into Walgreens, and Walgreens will have about 400 to 1,000 square feet devoted to Birchbox. Yep. So people can make their own boxes and then sign up for the subscription service for all their makeup needs. So curious, what do you guys think about this one?
I think it's a smart move. You know, we were talking earlier, there are roughly 3,000 Kroger stores in the United States right now. There are almost 9,000 Walgreens stores. So I think what this is doing is you have all of these distribution points, and the food delivery on one hand, I think makes sense as a quick way, an easy way to test whether or not this is working without a Kroger having to go in and build all of these or acquire real estate in all these markets to test this. So I think that's a smart move.
Mm-hmm.
On the Birchbox front, I think this is great because Birchbox up until this point, it's only online, and they are doing pop-up stores in a few locations, but it's mostly on the coast. And so mm-hmm. I think what this is enabling is middle America to really experience a brand like Birchbox, to get familiar with it, to go touch, to try on, which is critical in a makeup area. And Walgreens is doing a lot of other transformations to stay competitive in the beauty market as it is. So I think that this is a good partner to bring along for that.
And let me ask you a question.
Because we've
talked a lot about subscription service. Is the need to try on an experience different for this than it's say the meal kits going into grocery stores? Is that a different psychological phenomenon?
I think because there's some theater and there's some play involved in beauty, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's not just, and education too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just mm-hmm. about like executing a task.
Right.
Like I don't get up every day and I'm going to put makeup on. It's fun. It's a art form for
mm-hmm.
some people. And mm-hmm. so I think that there's a lot more involved in creating a premium beauty experience. And especially as you look at some of the next generations that are coming up in beauty, it's not about buying the NARS and Chanel's and MACs and these high premium makeup brands of the world anymore. It's about, you know, the accessibility of high quality makeup product that's made with natural and organic ingredients. It's all these things being accessible to the masses. And so I think that a company like Birchbox investing or in a partnership with Walgreens to really give you the distribution of their product is going to be pretty cool.
So you like both these moves.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Dan?
For the Birchbox one, I'm also a Birchbox subscriber as well.
Awesome.
I I like the discovery and the surprise piece of that when you open up your mailbox and, yeah. and you're wondering what you're going to get. So the piece where you form your own or make your own Birchbox in the store, to me, that just seems like regular shopping. You're putting in a box instead of your Walgreens bag.
I think just to clarify, yeah. I think that the benefit that they're claiming that we will provide is that it's higher end product. So okay. right now, Walgreens has, you know, their Boots partnership and right. a few other. La Roche-Posay is another brand that they have in store. But now they're going to, because of Birchbox, they're able to bring some more premium
sure.
brands
okay.
in. So that you can
that
make your
sense.
Own box.
That yeah. makes sense.
And it gets you into the service too, right?
It does, yeah. So I think if they can get more subscriptions, that will help their company, their stock prices or whatever they're evaluated on. I don't know if it would bring me into the store month after month. So what's the benefit for Walgreens? Is it accessibility for their customers to have the higher end merchandise?
I think so. And I think it's the idea that they'll have increased foot traffic okay. because they have these brands in mm-hmm. store.
And it's still underpenetrated now nationally,
right.
probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Interesting. Okay. What do you think of the Kroger thing?
I'm wondering, how are they the groceries that already exist in Walgreens, or is someone from Kroger bringing it over to Walgreens, and why don't they just bring it to your house instead? It feels like it would cost the same for Kroger or Walgreens.
So they are putting some Kroger product in the Walgreens. Okay. Walgreens will be able to sell some of the Kroger's label product. But I think
it's just one central point of distribution mm-hmm. too, right? So instead of having to make the deliveries to everyone's house in the neighborhood, they can make it to right. that one central location, which has, you know, economic benefits.
Yeah, and I think as you're starting to see, like, Walmart's doing grocery delivery tests in Chicago this week, they announced that too. I think these are just, you know, they're doing it in just a few stores. Mm-hmm. They're going to pilot it. I think it might just be a good test to see if there's a, if they have, again, you know, with 3,000 Krogers and 9,000 Walgreens, mm-hmm. how can they quickly find out if there's a market in some of those areas that
I'm
maybe
all about testing things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's interesting. At first, I hated the Kroger Walgreens thing. And just for point of clarity, it's 13 test stores with Kroger and 11 with Birchbox. But I think, Anne, you convinced me. Like, it actually gets, if there's that many Walgreens stores, especially in urban locations, if you can start to get your groceries into places easily and more mm-hmm. cheaply that are inaccessible to, mm-hmm. for other people, I think back at the time when I used to live in San Francisco, for example, I think it makes sense. Question I would have, though, is are they testing it that way? Or are they testing it in a place where you just have a Kroger down the road, which
right,
it sounds
right.
like it's pretty close to Kroger's headquarters. So you have to wonder, like, does that really help me from an economy of time perspective? And therefore, is the test results that I see, if it's not successful, does that mean it doesn't work? I don't know. I get a little worried about that. And as far as Birchbox, I mean, I think I'm a little skeptical there. I was a little skeptical there, too, just because are we going to see the behavior we're talking about while you're standing in a Walgreens versus, you know, being online or being on your mobile phone and trying to figure out if that's an experience you want to get into. And the Birchbox stores themselves haven't exactly blown the doors off anything. So will they in a Walgreens, which isn't an experience they can totally control? I don't know. Time will tell. That one, I'm curious to see how it plays out. Thanks. It's great to have Dan here today. So, Dan, thank you for being here. Again, if they want to learn more about Q4, where does everybody go?
You can go to the website. It's www.q4, that's C-U-E, the number 4, unconference.com.
Awesome. Yes. Awesome. Well, thanks to Dan today. And thanks, of course, to our sponsor for today's episode, The Storefront. You can check them out on thestorefront.com. Carter, if you're listening, which I'm sure you are at home in bed, please, please, please get better soon. And to everyone out there, as always, be careful out there.